What is going on, crypto family? So today we're going to do things a little bit different. We have three founders from three different companies all on at the same time. We've got Andre, the founder and CEO of AmbiSafe. We have US Capital Global's founder and CEO, Jeff. We have myself, Robert Beatles, the co-founder and builder of the Monarch Wallet, all on at the same time. So in this interview, we discuss the listing of SpaceX shares. That's right, SpaceX shares via the USPX token. We discuss regulations, importance of good, trusted actors in the space, sailing ships across the ocean, crazy alien sightings, and more. You're not going to want to miss it. A full disclosure, Monarch is partnered with AmbiSafe. We'll discuss the details of, you know, how they're going to use our acquired BD, our exchange, etc., once we have SEC FINRA approval. But until then, I'm just offering full disclosure. Monarch is involved in the deal and several other deals that are to come that we'll announce later. Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beatles shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beatles and his guests. Robert Beatles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of TradingView Sessions, Crypto Beatles on YouTube, and owns several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beatles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. And one last thing before we get into this, please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. So without further ado, let's go check out the interview. What is going on, crypto family? So today we've got two people from two different companies on. It's going to be fun. It's going to be awesome. So we got Andre, the founder and CEO of AmbiSafe. And then we've got Jeff. He's the chairman, founder, and CEO of US Capital Global. So thanks a bunch, guys, for coming on. You know, we're excited to hear about all the stuff you guys are doing together. So to start off with, man, just how you guys doing today?
Yeah, doing well. Thank you, Robert, for having us, for hosting.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you very much. Yeah, we're happy. We're happy here in California. At least I'm happy in California.
So what part of California you in?
Our office is in San Francisco.
Nice.
Yes, yeah. Same for AmbiSafe.
So all three of us are just like, you know, close to San Francisco, and all three of us are, you know, using Zoom to do an interview. It's awesome. Yeah. We probably should have just met at Starbucks or somebody's boardroom. But quite all right. So, you know, we got a lot of stuff to get into today. So, I mean, I guess to start off with, you know, Andre, so we want to talk a little bit about these IPOs and how we're, you know, people are trying to tokenize them, right? So why did you decide to, you know, basically bring pre-IPO tokens to the blockchain? You know, what's kind of your vision there, if you can kind of, you know, just elaborate and explain that for us a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So AmbiSafe is one of the oldest ICO services providers, and we also have launched one of the first ICO platform. And to us, the problem is obvious. The biggest problem of the blockchain securities market is that there are no high quality offerings at the moment on the market. There is almost nothing going on that is really interesting for the investors. And after a little bit of brainstorming with Jeff and other partners, we came up to this idea that it would be nice to find a way to offer securities of well-established companies like Uber, Airbnb, SpaceX, you name it, the ones that investors are actually interested in through blockchain offerings platforms.
Gotcha. So your vision is to kind of take these unicorn companies, these IPOs, and tokenize them, you know, for the world. So how does that kind of work? What do these IPO tokens, you know, actually represent? Are they shares of the company? How does that work?
Yeah, so both tech and legal structures are pretty complicated. It took multiple components of the technology to get mature enough, and we are putting multiple pieces of puzzle together. So first thing that we are using is on-chain shares. This is a pretty new and very few companies have actually used it, where the token represents not just a promise of a company under some contract, but an actual share on the cap table of the company. And the actual cap table of the company, the list of shareholders, is maintained on the blockchain. So in this way, the shareholder rights are encoded in the token. Token is a share. This is one piece of the puzzle. Another one is regulatory compliance using smart contracts. A lot of the tokens are smart contracts, but very few of them are have actually encoded any regulatory compliance rules into the code of their smart contracts. I believe we are doing this right. We have encoded jurisdiction-specific regulatory rules, like the minimal level of accreditation the investor should have, which jurisdictions the token can be transferred to, and so on, into the smart contract. So we are translating legal language from shareholder agreements and offering memorandums into the code. And this is the second piece that was missing and that took some time to develop. And there is more I would like to talk about a little later.
Yeah, no problem. So basically, you guys are using smart contracts to do smart things, right? So that way you can make sure that the right people that are supposed to be holding these assets are holding them, and people that aren't supposed to be holding them won't be holding them. And
right.
All that kind of stuff. So making sure that there's regulatory compliance there in place. Very cool.
I've got a comment, but remember, all that was done, you know, that's all been done forever, right? But it was all done manual, right? So this, the beauty of using technology like this is you can follow the same rules, but they can be more automatic, and which reduces the friction in the transaction and the transaction costs. So it's kind of that blending of old school appropriate regulation and introducing technology to make things run smooth.
That is the beauty of blockchain, the automation side of things, taking out the middlemen and taking out all the old way of doing things and streamlining things for sure. So with these IPO tokens, so these are like initial public offering tokens or initial public offering stocks, shares, things like that. So say, for instance, you've got SpaceX or something like that. They haven't released, you know, their shares. They're not on the New York Stock Exchange. What do these tokens actually like really represent? Are they a piece of the share, the whole share? And then how do you price them?
Right. So as I said, the legal setup is a little complicated, but the tokens represent a share in a limited partner in the fund. And limited partner, which is, for example, a BVI-based company, it invests in the fund that holds shares of SpaceX. And we have partnered with US Capital, who's been managing funds for decades, to set up one of those funds to acquire shares of interest of the pre-IPO companies.
Gotcha.
So the token represents a share, like indirect share in a fund through a limited partner.
Gotcha. So you basically go out, or your BVI goes out and buys a bunch of shares from maybe employees of these companies. You guys hold those, and then you guys tokenize those shares into different percentages? It's like one token equals one share, or one token equals a percent of a share, or something like that?
Yeah, so it would be different on case by case. We are trying to map it to be one-to-one, like one token equals one share, or fractionalizing. So it's like 10 tokens equals one share. By fractionalizing, we are decreasing the entry barrier, so investors with smaller amounts of money can also participate.
And who actually can participate in this, right? So when you start tokenizing shares, who can participate in these offerings? Are there any limitations, things like that?
Yeah, there is actually a lot of limitations, and it's okay. This is what makes this offerings legal. If we properly follow all the rules and limitations, they won't be shut down by regulators. Allowed participants will differ on case-by-case basis. We are focusing on the developing markets, like non-US, the ones that are suffering from the problem of access, of having access to market the most. So I'd say it's majority of the countries outside of the US and EU. But for the details about specific offering, I will send you to the offering memorandum.
I might add, look, there. If you're starting off with very valuable, you know, securities like unicorns, like a Reddit or somebody, or a Airbnb, those companies have a limit to how many direct shareholders they can have. If they tip over the 2,000 limit, it automatically makes them a public company. So the way we hold the shares, we hold them in trust, right? And then that way, then someone like Andre can sell an interest in those shares without tripping the unicorn's 2,000 share limit, because there's a buffer between the actual shareholders and the unicorn company itself. That's a critical component. And the other factor that he mentioned is many of these things are considered very valuable in the U.S. Institutions and family offices buy them all the time, which is indicative of their value, but they're really not accessible offshore. Even family offices and larger institutions can't buy them. But I think what Andre's up to is he says, you know what, we can fractionalize this ownership and offer it to kind of the average investor, depending on where he lives, what he's qualified to buy.
Very cool. And then, Andre, what blockchain are you guys using for all this?
We are using Ethereum blockchain because we believe it's the most mature in terms of the ecosystem of developers and frameworks. There is an ongoing argument about which blockchain technology is the most advanced, what consensus algorithm is the most secure. We keep watching other alternatives, but I think Ethereum today provides like the optimal combination of risk and reward.
And what's really special about the smart contracts that you guys are using here? What's different from just regular ones?
Yeah, so the difference, what's special about our smart contracts is that we actually encode jurisdiction-specific regulations. For example, some of these tokens are offered through a broker in EU, and they're only allowed to sell to qualified investors in the EU. So we have an on-chain database of the KYC and qualification status check. And the smart contract will tap into that database before allowing the token to be transferred to verify that the recipient is actually qualified to receive the token. In this way, using smart contract and blockchain technology, we guarantee that only qualified investors can hold the tokens as it is required by regulation. But at the same time, in another country like Ukraine, where there is no regulation, anyone can hold the tokens. And it's still the same token. And smart contract knows country-specific regulations. So this is what we encode there.
I like it, man. So you're basically just baking in the compliance depending on what region they're in. That's awesome, man. And so, Jeff, you know, what do you think the impact of these IPO, you know, tokens are going to have, you know, just kind of on blockchain, the economy, you know, the community, just all together? What kind of impact do you think this is going to have? Because we haven't really seen this before. I mean, we've heard people talk about it, but we haven't really seen it.
Well, I think the first movers here, whether it's yourself or whether it's Andre, that actually offer reliable, valuable securities in this marketplace will really start to dominate, because you'll become a trusted source for valuable blockchain securities. And then first you're going to offer the blue chip, as they say, you know, the top drawer. And then later you're probably going to select other things like fixed income or things of that nature that you determine to be valuable and safe, and your network will rely on what you're willing to post to make a decision on what to buy. So it has a lot of powerful implications, especially, I think, Andre, I got to give him credit for really starting at the top of the food chain, you know, as far as a blue chip securities to offer.
Yeah, and so I guess that's kind of what the USPX is, right? That's SpaceX. That's the first offering we're all talking about here, right?
Right.
That's right. That's correct.
The most demanded company on the private market, according to some analysts. So we've decided to start from it, but more will follow.
That's it. You know, swing for the fences right out the gate, right? And so, Jeff, you know, how do individuals today, you know, kind of invest in these pre-IPO equity of well-known unicorn companies? Are they using like a similar, you know, legal contracts to like what AmbiSafe is using? How does it all kind of work today?
Well, today, in order to buy, to get a piece of a unicorn or a blue chip, I call them blue chip, private companies, right? You generally have to have at least 5 million under management. You've got to be what's known as a qualified purchaser, not just accredited, but you have to be qualified 5 million. And then you can buy them on the secondary market. You have to write a minimum check of about $1 million to $5 million, right? And even then, you won't get on the cap chart, right? So you'll buy a derivative type product. You'll be part of an SPV that's spun out of Kleiner Perkins, you know, although Kleiner Perkins is a reliable counterparty, right? So if Kleiner Perkins is managing an SPV, you wrote a $5 million check into that spin out, you know, there's a very, very extremely high probability you're going to get paid when the time comes. So that's how it's done now. It's a cumbersome paperwork process. It's slow, it's expensive, a lot of legal fees involved and things like that. But that's how it's not done now. You have to buy usually an SPV. Now, if you're going to buy, like we're buying much more than that, 10, 25, 50 million, we'll buy direct shares and we'll be on the cap chart.
One of the biggest questions people are going to have, you know, is do you need approval from these companies, you know, for these shares that you guys are tokenizing? Like, do you need to go out and get SpaceX's, you know, seal of approval to do this? Or can you just go out and buy the shares and tokenize this? How does that work?
Well, look, the truth of the matter is that U.S. Capital is a qualified purchaser. So we can buy as much as we want and be on the cap chart. The same with Reddit, the same with Uber. We can buy it because we're, you know, we're an investment bank qualified. So we hold the security, and then our investors also are qualified purchasers. Like Andre, he can buy into our position because we've checked him out. He's a qualified purchaser, right? So at that point, there's no look through. There's no really look through from us to Andre. And there certainly is no look through to Andre for who composes his shareholders or funds. So it's a really compliant way to do this. We're, for an abundance of caution, we're keeping this, we're doing this offshore for now. But we really think that the participants in Andre's company and the fact we're a qualified purchaser really insulates very well these unicorn companies from the 2,000 shareholder trigger. And the fact we're a qualified purchaser in an investment bank makes them comfortable for us to be on the cap chart.
Gotcha. So you don't need anything from SpaceX that says, yeah, go ahead and do this. You're able to buy them. You guys can tokenize them.
That's correct.
Cool. And then, you know, which other assets do you think could benefit from having these, you know, secondary markets on the blockchain, and, you know, and why?
Well, that's a question I'd push out to you guys, right? Because you represent the marketplace for these things. What do you think, Andre?
Yeah, I think we should follow the demand. So historically, there has been a trend of investors traveling to the financial centers of the world from other countries. Like there are tours for Asian and for Eastern European investors organized to Silicon Valley to give them an opportunity to co-invest with Sequoia and others in the local unicorns. And now with the blockchain, we are disrupting this. This is what ICO as a concept has disrupted. There is no need to travel anymore. Now you can be located anywhere and still invest in all these high demanded tech companies. After that, I guess will come other industry like biotech, AI, whatever venture money is looking for. Then once blockchain technology has gained enough adoption, like every third person in the world has a wallet in their phone, it would be time to offer more conventional banking products like savings account with some fixed interest or accounts for public stock trading once we have enough public stocks offered through the blockchain platforms. The level of risk of the securities and products offered will keep decreasing with the penetration of the blockchain. Like the more users we have on the blockchain, the more general population we have there, the lower risk products they will be looking for. But current community is still looking for pretty much high risk investments, and they're willing to take the risks.
Yeah, well, just to kind of build off what Andre was saying there, because you kind of threw the question back at us. So, you know, I think eventually we're going to, you know, tokenize the world, right? I think anything that's an asset that's in the physical world is going to end up coming over to the digital world. So right now it's just a kind of a matter of compliance and regulation, trying to figure out what that is, especially here in the U.S. But I mean, imagine, you know, the New York Stock Exchange, everything is tokenized. Imagine, you know, real estate, you know, tokenized. Imagine, you know, commodities just, or even just, you know, things that come from the ground, you know, your food, you know, your oil, your gas, your gold, your silver, all that stuff can be tokenized. And so eventually, I think that's what we're going to see is this gradual kind of growth towards digital everything and being able to, it's so much faster, so much cleaner, so much more easy to track than our current methods. And I think that's, where we're, you know, initially going. So sorry to interrupt you, Jeff.
I concur. But you know what? I think both you guys are discounting an important factor. And that is you become trusted sources, whether it's Andre or whether it's yourself. Because when you talk about shortening the cycle time for doing things, when you deal with trusted people, it shortens the cycle time to do things. So you can make it easy for them to do it electronically, but if you're trusted, you've got a track record, people get paid when they do deals on your site, transactions don't get lost, that's a huge thing. And I think we need to keep that in the equation, that not only you have to have valuable assets, but you really have to have trusted parties to do this, and then that speeds up the process.
Yeah, you're right, and that's one of the, no, you're absolutely right.
Why do we like the New York Stock Exchange? It's a trusted place to do deals because everybody up there has been vetted, right? And it's a trusted place to go, or NASDAQ, for instance. And I think you guys represent that same potential community of a trusted site to do business.
Well, we appreciate that. One of the beauties of blockchain is you don't really have to trust anybody either, right? So, you know, it's one of those trustless mechanisms to where if it's on, you know, basically if you're using the blockchain and you're, you know, respected in the space and, you know, you're reliable, all that kind of good stuff, you know, it just makes it that much better, right? Because that's one of the beauties of blockchain is the transparency and how you don't really have to trust the other person to wake up in the morning and make sure that they did their job. It just kind of works, right? So it's just the automation process. And so, you know, that helps out a lot. What were you going to say, Andre?
Yeah, I'll take the middle ground here. So what blockchain does is it reduces, it compresses the number of layers in the ecosystem of financial markets from, let's say, five currently, where you have a broker and an underwriter, an ATS where it's traded, or stock exchange transfer agents, and so on, to one or two where blockchain becomes the transfer agent and broker, and can be something else. So it reduces the number of layers in the system. So you have to trust fewer number of companies. And in case of Bitcoin, you don't have to trust anyone because it's like the most basic application currency. The only thing you have to trust is your computer that is running the software. But in case of with securities, you still have to trust the company or the issuer of the securities. But it's not as bad as it is today with non-blockchain implementation of the same offerings. Because of the automation, blockchain reduces the number of companies that we need to make it work and reduces the cost.
You're right, man. It's the beauty of blockchain, man, is all the efficiencies that it brings, right? And then all the layers of trustlessness that you don't, you know, typically need like in the real world. So, you know, I guess the big question here, man, is, you know, when is this going to go live, right? So when can people start buying these USPX tokens? Where are they going to be available? All that kind of stuff.
Sure. Our first offering goes live this month. Currently, the plan is to launch it on June 18th. We may delay it for another week due to some legal preparations. But yeah, it's going live this month.
It's awesome. You have anything you want to add, Jeff?
No, I rely on a lot of, I love technology. We rely on it all the time. But I'm not, I'm telling you, trusted counterparties. I know the technology works, but people are going to start looking at your recommendations, man. They're going to go, wow, SpaceX. All right. Robert likes SpaceX. I think I'll take some of that. Or it might be fixed income. Well, Robert, you know, this thing throws off an 8.5% or 9% coupon. You know, he likes it. I'm willing to take some of that. I just don't think the personalities will ever be out of this deal, but I think a lot of the rote work and that kind of transactional work will be much more efficient.
No, I hear you. But anybody that watches this show knows that I never give financial advice and I never, ever tell people to invest in anything because people can definitely lose all their money.
No, that's true. But what I want to just say, but when you choose to list a security, what I mean is not pitch it, but when you choose to list it on a platform, you've made a choice. You've made a choice not to list something else and to list something else. Although you're never going to indicate whether people are going to really make money or lose money. But they are going to look at what you chose to list. And I think that's a very important feature.
Yeah, but same way SEC decides to give an approval for public offering, it doesn't mean that they make a recommendation. They just have a documented process of qualification, right?
So Qualification, right?
Or the community, asks you to list it. Yeah,
just to list it, there's a certain hurdle to get on. In this industry now, the standards are not yet set, you see, but you guys will set those standards. Well, you know, what kind of underwriting has to happen? What kind of background checks on the principals? How much money should they have raised already? You know, things like that. Those will be criteria for listing, and this is what the industry will need. And that's what I mean. I don't mean you're going to say, yeah, you'll make a lot of money on this deal. I just mean, hey, man, you're not going to get ripped off on this deal. If the company doesn't do well, that's their problem. But at least there's no fraudsters in there.
So you're talking about the counterparty risk. You're talking about that side of things. Gotcha.
Yeah, whether it's the issuer or whether it's the rest of the parties that are building the blockchain piece or whatever. That's very important.
Well, I definitely think that digital assets are where things are going. And so this is very, very exciting. One of the things I love to do on, you know, the channel here is, you know, find out more about the founders, you know, kind of like what makes them tick a little bit, right? And so, you know, for both of you, what's maybe like been one of the most important books or people, you know, that's kind of helped shape your life that you would recommend to others, either as a mentor or as just a book to read?
I read Crossing the Chasm.
Crossing the Chasm is a great one.
That's a book of biblical proportions for our sector.
Yeah, for me, one of the most biblical books is Ben Horowitz's Hard Thing About Hard Things. It's about the dark side of entrepreneurship. Like, also feels like a Bible.
Exactly. Yeah, I hear you. And then maybe what's something about your guys' selves that, you know, maybe other people don't know?
How about you, Robert? What did you like?
Oh, my favorite books. Bible would be the first one, and then probably Art of War would be the second. But yeah, you got 4,000 years of history in the Bible, basically tells you everything that happened and what will happen, and Art of War, you know, so many nuggets in there, man. You know,
I love the Bible. I only quote one verse that I know, and you can tell where it is. There's nothing new under the sun.
Solomon.
And I use that for all his tech stuff.
Yeah, it's very true. King Solomon. Yeah, one of the wisest people other than Jesus. Yeah.
There you go.
Very cool. And then what's maybe something about your guys' selves that other people don't know? It could be, you know, maybe a hobby, maybe, you know, something you guys like to do that other people don't know. Feel free to jump in. Andre, what do you got?
Interesting.
Cross-dressing on Tuesdays. What do you got?
Yeah, okay. In my spare time, I build telescopes to watch aliens.
Yeah? So, okay. So you believe in aliens, man. Awesome. All right. We just took a sharp right turn here. All right, cool. So you think aliens are real, huh?
I meant UFOs. There is a lot of things flying in the space that are not easily identifiable. So this is my hobby.
That's awesome, man. So you build telescopes. How far out can you see? And what's the craziest thing that you've seen with the telescope, other than
actually, the nicest thing I've seen is a pair of NASA launched satellites. It's a device that tracks gravity of the Earth. So it's a pair of satellites that are flying together, like really close to each other, but they look like two flying dots. It doesn't look like a usual plane. And they measure the micro fluctuations of the distance between them due to fluctuations of the gravity field of Earth. So this is the coolest thing I've filmed so far.
It's pretty awesome. And then do you believe, you said first, you know, aliens. So you a believer?
Yeah, it was kind of a joke. I think we have to have a separate talk about it.
Gotcha. What about you, Jeff?
Well, a couple of things. One, I've been a sailor my whole life. And so one of my dreams was to sail around the South Pacific. So I sold one of my earlier companies back in the 90s because I'm old. And I had a big sailboat. I sailed from Santa Barbara, back and forth to Hawaii a few times. And then I sailed from Santa Barbara to the Marquesas and Tahiti and all around the South Pacific for a number of years before I came back and founded U.S. Capital. And then I've also been a hatha yogi for maybe 25 years. So I do a lot of Ashtanga yoga for years and years. Travel to India a lot, things like that. So
awesome.
It's hard. When I say hard, I mean I used to practice 6 days a week for almost 2 hours a day.
Wow.
5:15 to 7:15 in the morning.
That is some commitment right there. But I mean, as far as
WhatsApp, look at my WhatsApp. You see, I've got a picture of Eckhart Potter Shishasana.
Yeah, I've always loved, you know, cruising. You know, I haven't done the sailing side of things. I wouldn't trust myself with a boat. I can barely, you know, steer one, let alone, you know, dock one and things like that. But I love to cruise and, you know, get off at all these different places. You know, it makes things so much easier than traveling by car or by plane. But when you're out there in a sailboat, man, I mean, you are your own captain, man. So have you ever gotten to some like crazy weather and you're like, oh man, what was I thinking? You know, what's some of the crazy stuff that you saw out there, and what's like maybe some of the, you know, the most beautiful stuff that you saw out there?
You know, the to get out to sea and have a 360 degree horizon with little clouds on the whole horizon is actually pretty awesome. And then one time I was sailing to Hawaii, and I crossed an area. It was a full moon, a bright full moon, and there was a complete lunar eclipse that evening. And so I'm sitting out there full moon. Then pretty soon there's like less moon and less moon. I said, "What's going on here?" And then it was a full eclipse out there, which was I didn't even know it was going to happen until I was out there. But I've done that. And to Andre's point, now I was sailing from Tahiti, Papeete, to Honolulu. And I'm on night watch sitting out there. And speaking of aliens, I look off to up into the wind, you know, and in the middle of the night, and there was a bright glow that came right out of the water.
Right out of the water?
Completely unexpected. I mean, it wasn't the other way, like a meteor going into the water. It was this bright glow blasted right out of the water. It was miles and miles away. I couldn't really see anything. That was weird. That was not weird, but it was just like a phenomenon. You just go, wow, what is that?
Yeah. I mean, was it a submarine launching a satellite or?
Who knows? I mean, just like you're sitting there, all of a sudden there's this big bright light and something blasts off into the water and you go, what? It's like the middle of the Pacific, halfway from Tahiti to Hawaii. I mean, why?
Did you see it go up in the sky or was it just light and then it just disappeared?
It was like a reverse meteor.
Oh, wow. But you saw something shoot up like into space or just...
So, you know, it's a flare from a, but I was listening to the radio and I turned the radio on. No one was hailing in trouble. It wasn't a flare, right? So there's a lot of stuff that's inexplicable.
Sounds like it, man. Yeah. I haven't done anything like that before. I've been on cruise ships out there, but I would not trust myself out there steering a boat. I'd probably be going around in circles. For a year, I'd be like Tom Hanks or something like that. I'd be like Castaway.
Right. Well, look, it's a humbling experience because when you go at sea like that, you realize how insignificant and you think you're like, you think you might be like a grain of sand in the universe. that's huge compared to who your little soul is out there.
It's awesome.
You get that perspective.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about there, man. I've been out there just floating around, but like I said, I would not trust myself as captain of any boat. But
I sailed my whole life, so it was a risk that I could take, right? Because I've been doing it.
So. For sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, it takes all kinds. And obviously, you know, there's pilots and there's captains of ships and, you know, God love them. And we trust them to get us places safely. But like I said, I am not that guy. So I'll be in the back, you know, drinking my scotch, having a cigar while, you know, the captain's up there keeping us safe.
You know, all sailors, whether you're on a cruise ship, you're a sailor, powerboat, you're a sailor, you have a sailboat, you're a sailor. It's just, we're all sailors.
All right, guys. Well, we better get out of here. I had a great time hanging with you, Andre and Jeff. Thanks a bunch for, you know, coming on and talking about the USPX token, telling us about your insights into the space. You know, I also enjoyed, you know, hearing, you know, Jeff's sea story about the light. Maybe it was an alien. Maybe it was a satellite. We don't know, I guess. But Andre, I definitely want to hear more about your thoughts on aliens, but we'll save that for the next one. Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beetle shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beetles and his guests. Robert Beetles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of TradingView Sessions, Crypto Beetles on YouTube, and owns several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beetles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. And one last thing before we get into this, please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right, so now that that's out of the way, let's get into this. So thanks a bunch, guys. God bless you. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon.